honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 96-year-old Bill Roach of Colorado Springs, Colorado, who in the early stages of an Air Force career that lasted more than three decades, survived nine missions as a B-17 gunner. When we left off, he was telling us about his ninth and final mission when their crippled bomber was limping toward theoretically friendly territory in Poland because a return to their base in England had become impossible.
When we let down, though, after we flew for quite a while, we were over Poland, we saw hills around us that were higher than we were. That's when the pilot said, I better find a place to bring it down. Well, of course, we didn't see any airfields or anything. Although there was one nearby, we never did see it. So we ended up landing in a meadow right outside of Liszki, Poland, which was about 15, 20 kilometers outside of Krakow. When we got down, we could see Russian convoys. We could see the trucks and everything, the high dirt roads. And he saw this little area, and there was, matter of fact, there was a Russian PO-2 that had crashed in this meadow. And this was just a farm field that had a little creek running across it. And there were wires. There was a dirt road on this side and on this side over here. And he came in under the wires and wheels down because we didn't want this to be a crash landing where we couldn't get out of there.
Right.
His idea was we'd get in there and the Russians would help us repair our engine and we'd fly out of that field.
All right.
So he said, well, we'll go in with the wheels down. And, boy, he made a beautiful landing. Well, you saw the plane. Mm-hmm. There's no damage. The ball, when we hit the ground, it was muddy and raining. And the wheels just fell into the mud. And the ball turret actually hit the water on the field. When you see it sitting in the field, the ball turret is actually partially in the water. That's how we sank. We rolled about, I don't know, maybe 50 feet before we sank. And, of course, by this time, the Russians had this field surrounded. And as soon as we landed, they were out there. So we came out of the plane.
With your hands up?
Yeah.
Don't shoot?
Don't shoot. We're friends.
Uh-huh.
But they saw we had our wheels down when we circled to get in there. So they didn't fire at us, for one thing, which is good.
Your future at that point had to feel a little uncertain. You had no idea.
Yeah. We thought we'd get out of there. That was the pilot's idea. Matter of fact, we even started working on the engine. They sent a mechanic, Russian mechanic, but he wasn't going to get us out of there because they wanted that B-17.
Ah.
And so after a couple of days, they wouldn't let us go back to the B-17. They took over. That's why that guard was there. And they actually got it out of there. I found out. I went back there a number of years ago with my son. And some of these young Polish guys that knew all about crash landings in Poland, they were preparing a book about it, as a matter of fact. They took me to the exact site where we came down.
Wow.
And this one guy said that his grandfather saw him take the plane out of there. They fixed it, and they took it out of there. And there was an airfield on the other side of Krakow. And that's where they locked us up. Finally, they took us over there and locked us up on the 1st of April. Anyway, we were there from February the 26th until we were kind of loose running around. We were with a motor pool company that they had. Our latrine was a cave. There was a cave near this motor pool. That's where we used to go to the latrine. But anyway, they decided from Moscow, I guess, somebody came back and said lock them up because the communists were taking over Poland and they didn't want us. We had met a couple of Polish people. And they, of course, they knew what was going on. So, as a matter of fact, this woman that befriended us, they arrested her and she disappeared. We heard later when I went back with my son, we found out they have records of people that were deported to the camps.
Mm-hmm.
When after the communists took over, and she was one of them. Mm. Her name was Nusia Kalishinska.
Mm.
And she was a piano teacher, and she lived in a little cottage near where we were, and she saw us, and she had us over to her little cottage a couple of times. So they grabbed her and shipped her out of there.
Well, and there are stories of guys like you, Americans who ended up in Soviet hands, who were never heard from again, who the Soviets denied they ever held.
Yeah.
I'm just interested in what it was like for you going through this mentally and emotionally when, you know, the Soviets are supposed to be our allies. Now they're holding us against our will. Yeah. We're prisoners of war, and who knows when that's going to change.
But, you know, they treated us pretty well. We had
good.
This unit that we were with there, it was a major was in the command. But when he left, a private took over. Because he was the only guy that had any education. He was a teacher in Moscow, and he tried to help us, I know, because he gave us a cigarette ration. None of us smoked.
Mm-hmm.
But we got these Russian papirosi, you know, half tobacco, half empty space. I don't know if you've seen them.
No.
Just the tobacco was only on half of the cigarette. Anyway, they didn't mistreat us, but they mistreated us in that they locked us up. That was the main thing. And they kept us under surveillance while we were first there. They took us into Krakow. One day they let us go to Krakow. Took us in a Ford truck. And anyway, that's another story. I could write a book about that. But then on the 1st of April, which happened to be Easter Sunday morning, we had walked back into Krakow, 14 kilometers from where we were staying. We left two guys at the camp because we had met this Polish family that had a restaurant. And they had said, you all can come back for Easter Sunday. Polish, you know, we have a big feast.
Right.
So we went back to this apartment house, and there was two British commandos who had been captured and at Dunkirk or something. They had been in a German camp for about 5 years, and the Russians liberated them and then they put them in a Russian camp.
Oh, man.
Well, they broke out of the Russian camp, and they were living with a Polish family. They're the ones that told us, you go to this Polish family, and, you know. And so then they invited us to come back for Easter.
Mm-hmm.
So Easter, some of us came back, and we were sitting in this apartment house in Krakow when a knock on the door. Here's two Soviet officers. Somebody, our two guys that we left back at the camp, had told them where we went because the Russians had said, we've got a plane, we're going to fly you out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, well, okay. And so we told these two British guys, they're going to fly us out. Come on with us.
Oh, no.
Well, what they did, they took us to this airfield that we didn't even know existed, took us out there, and that's when they locked us up. They took everything we had. They took our watches. We had a couple of 45s. They took our weapons. They took everything, locked us up in this brick building out at this airfield, and the two British guys were thrown back into the camp. And, well, we stayed out there for a little while watching. They were flying A-20s.
Uh-huh.
The Russians had a squadron of A-20s. You familiar with the twin-engine A-20?
You bet.
And they had some Russian planes, and they had some Hurricanes. They had all kinds of planes out there. And they were flying combat out of this field, and we could watch them when they were taking off, and we'd watch them. They'd come back. They'd have funerals for people that were killed. They'd have the bands were playing, and they'd march down the aisle, everything. Well, they kept us there for a while, and then they put us on a plane and shipped us to the Ukraine, right outside of Kiev.
Hmm.
They had set up a big old building out there, and there were 75 of us there. We had been gathered up from all over Eastern Europe, from some RAF guys or guys from the 15th Air Force. Two Tuskegee Airmen.
Really?
Yeah, were there. Two P-51 guys. They had made an emergency landing in Bucharest, and the Russians grabbed their two P-51s and shipped them into this camp. So we stayed. This was really they had dug a slit trench outside. That was our bathroom. And they had a lime. They drew a lime line all the way this big building. And they had armed guards with bayonets walking patrol outside. And we couldn't go beyond this line. Finally, they put us on a train and shipped us down to Odessa. And this was on the 28th of April. I know because I've got a copy of Pravda. And it shows the Americans and the Russians meeting on the Elbe River. That was on the 28th of April. We went to Odessa, and there was an American warehouse in Odessa with Lend-Lease, and there was an American Lieutenant Colonel in charge of it and one sergeant. And they had instructions from Washington, don't release any more of that equipment to the Russians. This is because we were beginning to run into a lot of problems with the Russians. So they shipped us out of Odessa on a British ship, small boat ship that had no provisions, nothing to feed us. We ended up in Naples, Italy, and I was in Naples. Well, we moved from Naples up to Caserta. Caserta was headquarters of the 8th Army, 8th British Army.
Mm-hmm.
And Mussolini had just been captured, he and his wife and his mistress. They were hung on a gas station up in Milan. They had a picture of him in the Stars and Stripes. But anyway, they put us in a tent village up in Caserta, which was a replacement depot. And we were there when the war ended on the 8th of May. Then eventually put us on another boat. We went from Naples to Marseille. It took us 7 days to get from Naples to Marseille on this boat out in the middle of the water with an Italian crew. Anyway, we finally got back to England on the 26th of May. War, of course, was well over. And finally, July of 45, I came home on the Queen Mary with 20,000 other troops.
What did it feel like to see American soil again?
Well, it was fantastic to see the Statue of Liberty and the boats in the harbor with the water throwing up. And yeah, it was quite. I slept on the deck the whole way over. It only took 4 days to get across with the Queen Mary.
I've got to ask you, I mean, just when you talked about Easter Sunday here, you've been invited. It's Easter. You talked about going to a Catholic school. Easter obviously means something to you. There's a significance of that day.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening to you was the exact opposite. Easter's all about new life, and all of a sudden, your freedom is taken from you on Easter Sunday.
On Easter Sunday, the 1st of April, yeah. And not only that, they had all this food sitting out on the table. You know, but you've seen it. I don't know, you've been with the Polish family on Easter Sunday. But we hadn't had much to eat, all along. I weighed 124 pounds, and we were just getting ready to eat when these damn two Russians knocked on the door, so we never got anything to eat on Easter Sunday. And then they put us in, that actually wasn't a Ford truck, it was a Studebaker.
Oh, okay.
Studebaker truck. I remember we all got in the back of this truck. See, we were happy as hell. We were going to be flown out of there.
Yeah.
Instead of being flown out, they locked us up.
And so then, I mean, you don't know when or if you're ever going to get out of there. So when you got to that April 28th meeting, and you're exchanged back into American hands. Can you help us understand? Because we've never lived through that, and most of us never will. For you to go from free to having your freedom taken from you to that day and what you experienced, what was that like?
Well, the first thing, the big disappointment was the food. Because we'd been on really bad rations. I mean, they were feeding us horse meat. We would actually see the horses. The airfield that where they were keeping us, they had an underground place where they kept food.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd see them bringing with these the Russians used a lot of horse-drawn stuff. They would we could see these carcasses of these horses. They'd bring them into there, and then we would get this ground-up stuff. And one day, I remember in the Ukraine, we had there was no electricity in this whole thing. They had a generator outside, and we were sitting there eating in the dark, and we were chewing on something. It tasted really good, we thought it was great. The lights went on all of a sudden when the generator kicked in. We were eating fish heads.
Oh, wow.
We were actually chewing on fish heads because that was the protein, we didn't know they were fish heads. It just tasted, and we were swallowing. And then we said, God, we're eating these damn fish heads. Anyway, that was the main thing we thought about was missing this Polish meal. But then, of course, we knew that things were going to be different. We no longer could get out and walk. We could leave where we were before and walk around. Here we were actually locked up in a building. We stayed that way when they shipped us to the Ukraine. It was even worse in the Ukraine. And when we put us on this train to go from Kiev to Odessa, which is not very far, it took us 2 days to get there because of all the Russian troop trains. Our train would stop at every village, practically, and farmers would get on with the stuff that they were taking to market. And some of these soldiers on the train, would kick them off. And God, I tell you, the way they treated them. They gave us 3 raw eggs. They gave us a half a loaf of bread and a can of cream that we had sent them, Lend-Lease cream. When we got to the station, I can't eat a raw egg. I just threw the damn thing against the wall when we passed this station. But that was one of the big problems was, if you were a POW in Germany, at least you had a Red Cross parcel and you got some food. They don't have PXs, and they live off the land.
Mm-hmm.
And, they go into a place like Poland, and God, they take the pigs and the chickens and the cows and everything. That's their PX.
How much did you weigh when you were liberated?
124.
What were you before?
140. We were only there from February the 26th until May, 1st of May. Yeah.
And was there a time after they had locked you up where you considered the possibility that you may never get out of there? You may never make it home?
you know, I figured the possibility they might ship us out somewhere to Eastern Siberia, you know. They were shipping people from Poland all over, you know. Mm-hmm. If you collaborated with the Germans, or if you were in the Polish underground, that's what they really were trying to stop. They were shipping all kinds of people out of Poland that were opposed to communism.
You know, the other thing that I was wondering about with regard to that, how much did your family know about what had happened to you?
I was MIA the whole time I was gone. You know when they found out? Hmm. When we got to Naples, Italy. And they quarantined us on VE Day. They wouldn't let us go out of the base because they were notifying our families that we were returned to Allied control. I've got the telegram here, as a matter of fact.
Because they didn't want you guys to go do something stupid and get yourselves in trouble now that they finally told your family they're alive?
Yeah, it's probably.
And did you have a chance to talk to your folks or your family?
Here's
about
a copy.
The Secretary of War desires me to express his deep regret that your son, Staff Sergeant Roach William L., has been missing in action in Germany 26 Feb. 45. If further details of other information are received, you'll be promptly notified. So that was March 15th. And then May 9th, it says, the Secretary of War desires me to inform you that your son returned to military control. So did you ever get a chance to talk to your family about what they were going through during that time that you were missing?
They never mentioned it at all. Mm-hmm. I know my mother had a mass set for me at the church because when we were missing, and I've got all of these businesses in Lexington sent her letters, you know, telling her, don't worry, missing means this and blah, 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 like the Chamber of Commerce. And I've got about 10 copies of letters that they wrote to my mother telling her, you know, how they sympathize with her and so forth. We never discussed it one after I got home.
I mean, that was a pretty intense few months that you spent in the Army Air Corps at the end of World War II there. But you ended up doing 32 and a half years in the U.S. Air Force, retiring as a colonel. And I know we don't have time to go through everything you did, but one of the things that you did, you spent some time in Russia after the war. Then you taught Russian at the United States Air Force Academy. How long did you do that?
8 years. I taught from 58 to 60. I taught the first class.
The first class at the academy.
The first seven classes I taught.
Uh-huh. And during the Cold War, learning Russian can be a very valuable thing.
Well, it was the big thing there after Sputnik. Everybody got interested. But I taught for 5 years, and then I went to Moscow, and I was involved in a lot of very, very classified stuff in Moscow. I know that the Cold War, that there was a tremendous possibility of actually nuclear war. I mean, people really, when you remember how we used to teach the students to get under the desks and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And there was very, very, very much concern that the Cold War was going to become a hot war. And there were a lot of people that were involved in classified projects. Like I told you about this thing in Moscow, I mean, people wouldn't believe it if you told them what the heck you were doing up there sitting in an attic for 2 years listening to the Kremlin talk to each other. Anyway, there was a lot of that going on, and people were in the military, particularly in the intelligence part of the military that knew what was going on, were very much concerned.
Wouldn't it be great to have another hour to talk about some of those Cold War secrets? Of course, much of it remains classified, so he couldn't tell us even if he wanted to, but we do have a few more stories from Bill in the podcast version of this episode at hometownheroesradio.com that would not fit into our radio time today. On that same website, you'll find photos of Bill Roach, and those are on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page as well. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.